Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Quality of Life Month, a powerful month, truly one of my favorite months. And today we have an awesome guest on the line. He's a wildly successful entrepreneur. He's a Lifebook graduate and an all-around awesome guy. Jeffrey Perlman is on the phone. How are you doing today, Jeffrey?
Hey, Jordan. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing excellent, my friend. Thank you for coming on the show. Listen, man, let's talk about the quality of life category. I know you're working on a book. Tell me a little bit about that.
I'm writing a book on branding and strategy. And to give you a little bit of background, I was the CMO of Zumba, which became the largest branded fitness company in the world. I was the CMO of Zumba, which became the largest branded fitness program in the world, with 15 million weekly class participants in 186 countries. And now I'm a chief strategy officer of Mindvalley. And again, Mindvalley is the fastest growing personal growth program on the planet. So I work on these iconic lifestyle brands in the wellness space. And the book is about brand strategy.
Yep. I love it. Love it, man. Well, listen, we're talking today about quality of life. It's a powerful category, where your material possessions lie, how you spend your days. And I think that you're a really great guy to talk to for this category. So let me ask you, why don't we start with Lifebook? How did Lifebook come into your life? And what were some of the biggest takeaways and impacts of the program?
So Lifebook, I asked, as I was getting involved with Mindvalley, I asked Vishen Lakhiani, what was the single most powerful program in Mindvalley that I should take? And he said, hands down, you should do Lifebook.
Nice.
And that was 2017, the summer of 2017 in Barcelona. And I took Lifebook, and it completely put my entire life into perspective. It allowed me to see all the areas that I had succeeded at, and all the areas that if I succeeded at, it would have a massive compounding effect. Mm-hmm. And for me, the areas that I needed to work on were my body and my relationship. And as soon as I understood that, I doubled down on those categories, and I'm reaping the rewards of that today.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Well, listen, I got to imagine the career and finance categories have been a wild ride for you just because of your success, you know, probably some really, really high highs there. Why don't we get off course right away? And let me just ask you a question. What do you think of this whole industrialized Western mentality of work, 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 pile up money, buy more stuff? Have you kind of observed that philosophy? And did you maybe fall trapped to that a little bit? What was that like?
So when I was young, I bought into the lie that money and things buy you happiness. And mm-hmm. where I got that from was from rap music. I used to listen to a lot of rap music when I was a young teenager. And they talked about their money and their cars and all of that stuff. And really marketing at large, you know, the world at large is trying to sell you that. I mean, that's how it works. If you buy this car, you're going to be happier.
Right.
Or you're going to get the girl and that's going to make you happier. And then on the other hand, you have a lot of people, you know, or I had a lot of people in my life telling me that was a lie, that money didn't buy you happiness. But I didn't believe them.
Right.
Because first of all, it's more nuanced than that. Money does buy you happiness. If you know, your kid is dying from a disease that only money, that a certain amount of money could solve or could fix, then in that case, money does buy you happiness, right?
Yeah,
so it's important to acknowledge that. But anyway, I had basically the entire world saying that money makes you happy. And then some voices in my life, parents and guardians saying that no, money doesn't make you happy. But like most of us in the Western world, I believed that money does make you happy. And when I turned 30, one of these rappers that I listened to was in my birthday party. He was actually playing in my birthday party. So that was Wyclef. And Wyclef was playing a song. Instead of No Woman, No Cry, he was playing No Jeffrey, No Cry. And everybody was laughing, and I was laughing. And every, you know, but I had one of those freeze moments in life where it's like, you know, time kind of stands still. And I realized that I really was crying inside. And the reason was because at 30, I got all of it. You know, I created the Inc. Magazine's Company of the Year. You know, I got all of this wealth and the cars and the, you know, the houses and all, everything that it could buy me. And I was even more unhappy. And the reason why I was more unhappy was because there's no more next step. There's nothing that I could cling my happiness onto. There's no sure. more like, oh, I'll be happy when I get to buy that.
I'm so glad you said that. Isn't that sort of like a human defense mechanism? Like if you always have something that you're striving for to make you happy, then you never really have to address your own shortcomings. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right. And then somewhere I read a Jim Carrey quote where he said something that I wish everybody had all the money in the world to go through this crisis. Right?
Yeah, because, totally.
Because you really need to, I mean, that's one way to get to the crisis. You need to have the crisis somehow.
Right.
And one way to go to the crisis is to get all of the money. Another way is to, you know, address it now, here.
Yes.
And realize that your happiness is your responsibility. It doesn't depend on things that you can acquire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge, man. I really appreciate that. Now what did that kind of inspire? Was that kind of a dark time after that realization, like you said? Was there a certain point where you discovered personal development, you discovered working on yourself, working on your relationships, things like that? How did it turn around?
Yeah, I know. That was a big crisis because I could no longer run towards anything. There's nowhere to run anymore.
Right.
So I had to be with myself. I had to turn inward and look at my demons and understand where my dissatisfaction came from.
Yes.
I started meditating and I left my job. I told my partners that I just couldn't do it anymore. It was an awful process. It was a big divorce, and I started focusing on myself. And today, thanks to amazing, you know, people and programs that I've found, my life is much better.
That's great, man. That's really good to hear. And like you said, you know, you're one of the rare examples of someone who did have the opportunity to have everything they wanted. And I don't think that humans are really meant to have everything they wanted. We evolved to strive, right? So when you give someone everything, you know, you see it with the problem, you know, people talk about with entitlement for the younger generation. When you're handed everything, there's all these weird, unforeseen consequences. Even if you're not handed it, you weren't handed it. You worked really, really hard. But there are these really deep-lying, unforeseen consequences. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, of course. There's a deep dissatisfaction. I see it. I mean, teenagers these days are totally unsatisfied.
Yes.
There's more depression than ever. There's more suicide than ever. I don't know if that's statistically true, but it seems that way.
It is. It is. There's all-time highs in especially certain groups. You're right. Do you think that's I think that it's not a physiological biochemical issue. I think it's more a character spiritual issue where these kids aren't finding their purpose. They're being satisfied. They're having their desires satisfied by little hits on social media and stuff like that. Do you think this is more of a character and a spiritual crisis than a health one?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, there's been when we went through the agricultural revolution, a lot of hunter-gatherers died. The ones that could not become farmers they died. There's a mass extinction there.
Wow.
And then when we went into the Industrial Revolution, the same thing happened. A bunch of people, you know, the farmers that weren't able to reinvent themselves as factory workers, city dwellers, they died. And so there was another mass extinction there. And today we're going through the automation revolution, where basically, you know, our needs are met. You know, if you think about Maslow's pyramid,
yes.
You know, survival is pretty much guaranteed. Like, as a species, we've pretty much hacked world hunger, we've hacked famine, or we're in the process of doing that.
Right, as the world has known them. Yeah, you're right.
And so at large, we're going to get that miserable place that I was in, where people are going to feel that at large.
And, wow.
You know, millennials feel it. You know, it's this kind of like, I've got everything and I have nothing to do. And so
right.
if we think about the what was the skill set that was needed when people went from into the agriculture revolution, it was muscle, right? How much muscle do I have on my farm?
Mm.
When people went into the Industrial Revolution, it was intellect. How much strategy do
sure.
I have on my supply chain, right?
Yeah.
And when people went into, and as we're going into the Automation Revolution, the most important thing is not intellect. The most important thing is emotional resilience. It's being able to be with yourself, being
so
able
true.
To understand yourself, what you love, what you know, what's going to make you find your rapture.
Yes. That's such a good point, man. I love that. And wouldn't you say that goes with the hierarchy of needs there, because you enter these more meta, like grandiose needs, need for finding your purpose, need for fulfillment and things like that. And I think we all understand that part. But what we don't understand is the perils, the psychological attacks, the invisible, you know, kind of in the air attacks, whether it's bullying on social media or just over inundation with information, overstimulation, never unconnecting. Like, I think we all understand the hierarchy of needs, but there's also a hierarchy of stressors. And if you don't have the resilience to handle those stressors, unfortunately, right now, you could go to a dark, dark place in today's world.
That's exactly right. So I live in Mallorca, Spain, in an island, a small island off of Spain. And the reason I live here is because I want to raise my kid away from all of that. Because
wow.
for me, him being resilient is much more important than him understanding, you know, how to do, you know, long multiplication or, you know,
so true,
anything like that. So
build an Instagram following, for instance. No,
right,
I totally get that, man. And I think it's something that maybe we've lost sight of. And I'm glad that there's people like, you know, Dr. Joel Wade working with schools and stuff, trying to be like, guys, you can't just, you know, medicate or legislate or wish away this problem. This is real internal hard work that we need to teach the next generation, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, man. But let's get Let's get back to things and stuff. What are some healthy beliefs and philosophies that you've come away with when it comes to relationships with material possessions? Like, what did you have to reshape? What is your relationship now with your things?
Well, to me, I've bought all of the things, right? Several years ago, when I finally kind of wrapped my head around this, I had bought an 80-acre property in Lake Tahoe, and it was beautiful. It was this massive house, and it was, you know, it had solar power, and it was just a dream, right? And I quickly realized how much of a slave I had become to it. I didn't own the property; the property owned me.
Damn.
And I, you know, I was always worried about it, and always trying to fix it, and all of that. And then I had a moment of truth where I'm like, look, I got lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. I was able to create a lot of wealth for myself and my family. And what I want to do with that wealth is I want to be free. Mm-hmm. Like freedom is the biggest thing for me. So what does freedom mean? So freedom is I can live wherever I want. I can go wherever I want. I don't have to be thinking about, you know, this, the boat that I own or the house that I own or the jet that I own, or I don't have to be thinking about any of that stuff. Mm. I'm lean. I can live in a very lean way. Right. I can probably live out of a suitcase, you know, and that's the best thing that I could buy with my money. And of course, if something happens, like, you know, as I said, if my kid needs some strange surgery that, I don't know, so if there's some sort of emergency, uh-huh. I can pay for that. That's what money buys me.
That is something so true.
Way
man.
More. Yeah. We're no longer in the age where we consume things. That's something else that is happening, you know, with the sharing economy, you know, like you don't buy a car. You want the experience of a great car share, but you don't want the car, right? Mm. Or you don't want to buy a second house. You want Airbnb.
Yeah.
So we're consuming less things and consuming more experiences. So what are the best experiences? Well, for me, one of, you know, there's many others, but a really good experience is freedom. And that's what I invest all my money into.
I love that, man. Yeah. And why do we have the tendency to tie up our money, tie up our lives? I mean, like you said, even if you have all the money in the world, like a lot of people don't have that on hand, where it's like they're all tied up in all these assets and different things. And a lot of the time those assets are more liabilities than assets. What do you think that instinct is to like tie up all our money, spend our money, do that? Is that an evolutionary thing?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's on a case by case basis. I think, you know, some people find a sense of self-worth from having a lot of things. Mm. I think, other people are just simply don't don't know where to invest or how to invest.
Right. And they just go. Yeah.
Yeah. And some people just don't plan for tomorrow, you know. Some people just you know, you get this all the time with basketball players, with pro athletes, where they just, you know, they make $100 million in 1 year and 10 years later they have nothing.
Right. They just spend it. Yeah, that's so tough, yeah. Man. It's super tough because what an amazing society we've crafted with the amount of personal freedoms, with the amount of innovation and all that. But it came with all these other trappings that we did not foresee. I think we all thought that our problems were just going to be over. You know what I mean? It was going to be like the Jetsons, like, oh, this 3-day work week is killing me. That is not what happened, man. Now everybody's working nights and weekends and on call and on the email. You know what I mean? Like when you were growing up, wasn't it supposed to be about like the robots taking care of the work and the 3-day work week?
Yeah. Of course, it was the Jetsons. I remember. I mean, but we had no idea. We had no idea because the you know, they're big. You know, they're big issues. It's like I had no idea that when I got all the cars and the, you know, the houses and all that, that I was going to be unsatisfied. It was just.
Right.
You know, that was the trajectory, was get enough for everybody to be comfortable and happy. And in large part, we've gotten that as a human species. I mean, sure, there's still hunger and famine in some parts of the world.
Right.
But we've gotten that, and there's more misery than ever.
Right. This emotional, this spiritual misery. But back to your beliefs, it seems like you've learned to derive different satisfaction from your wealth. Tell me if that's the case. It's not so much deriving satisfaction from the things that the wealth buys, but it's more about the freedom it creates, the space it creates, the safety net it creates, the security for your children. That's what money can buy that actually works, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that, man. I like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. And so I live in a very small place in Mallorca. It's a place that I don't, you know, like it's manageable. I don't need, you know, 5 housekeepers to keep it. You know, I don't need, so it's a very simple place.
Right.
It's a place that I can lock and leave and go traveling for 2 months, and I can come back and everything is there, you know. So it's a simple life in terms of material possessions, but incredibly rich life in terms of the freedom that I have.
I love that, man. That's some great advice. The Lifebook members love hearing stuff like that. Simplicity, definitely key. Definitely, yeah, a core value you want to work into your Lifebook, especially when you're dealing with 12 different categories. I wanted to talk about the way we spend our days, though. You know, quality of life is also about the time that we spend each day. And seeing as how you've had, you know, such crazy successes, you've probably dealt with a lot of overwhelm, business stress, things like that. I feel like people are quick to sacrifice their own time. How do you recommend Lifebookers regain their days and are working on the things that really, really matter to them?
Yeah, so time is our most limited resource, you know, especially as you start, you know, working on your Lifebook and you start figuring out your financial part out, you know, time starts becoming the thing that you cannot buy. So one thing that I can't buy more time. So it's really important to spend it well. I remember, you know, at Zumba, we were running in 186 countries, and we only had one office.
Jesus.
So I was in an airplane flying. I lived in an airplane, basically.
Whoa.
And I had no time for anything. And it led me to just to be miserable, you know? And so what I am militant about now is putting boundaries on my time. So I every night at 6:30 religiously, I am with my son from 6:30 to 8:30. And nice. every morning at 6 a.m., I'm in the gym religiously, you know, on weekdays. I don't care. I mean, unless there's, you know, somebody's dying, nobody messes with that time. Mm. And that gives me structure. It gives my family structure. It makes me a present when I'm with my family. It makes me present when I'm at work also, because there's boundaries. So that has been my best strategy, is to really be a boundaried and deliberate, mm-hmm, about what mode I'm in. As a matter of fact, my wife and I have a card system where I have four cards in my wallet. One card is romance. It's when her and I are spending time together. Mm-hmm. Another card is family time, and it's when you know, as a unit, we're spending time together. Mm-hmm. Another card is parenting time, so it's one-on-one with me and my son.
Nice.
And the other card is monk time, which basically I give her that card, and that means that she cannot bother me. I don't want to hear her, you know, sending me texts in the middle of the day, nothing. You know, it means that I am completely at work. Mm. So when I'm with her, there's no phone, there's nothing. I'm with her. When I'm at work, I am completely there. And having that allows me to be, A, much more successful in all of those aspects of my life. As a parent, as a partner, as a you know, as a businessman, and it allows me to invest in all of those areas in my life.
That's huge, man. And I think what you said, like fully committing to each one with the structure, is huge. Because if you're, you know, writing a work email on your iPhone while trying to watch the kid, you're not doing a very good job parenting or writing that email. You're probably at less than 50% efficiency with both of those. Whereas if you just maybe structured your life a little bit better, you can attack each one. You can let yourself switch gears fully, not have one foot in, one foot out, you know?
Exactly. And so what do I buy as I start accumulating wealth? What do I buy? So I buy the ability to work out every morning, right? So literally that slot on my calendar, I purchase that slot. Or the slot in my calendar where I'm with my son every night, I purchase that.
Wow. I like
so
that.
Yeah, look, if you're doing a startup, you have no time for family, you have no time. Yeah, put, you know, put it, give it all. But as you start accumulating wealth, that's what you're buying. You're buying time.
Mm-hmm. So true, man. I totally agree with that. I want to touch on your morning routine briefly. If you want to just tell us what your morning routine is like, or just talk to us about the importance of, like you said, getting up early, getting in the gym in the morning. I have a feeling that's probably a pretty huge part of your life strategy, right?
Well, it's become a big part of it.
That's great.
I wake up at 5 in the morning. Before I open my eyes, I do a short gratitude exercise where basically I keep my eyes closed for a few minutes only, you know, and I just think of the things that I'm grateful for. And I try to really feel that in my body. And then I get up, I hit the gym. Right after the gym, I have a big breakfast, a huge breakfast.
Nice.
With a lot of protein, and then I go to work.
Nice. Nice. Now, are you on that Mediterranean diet? How's the food out there in Spain?
It's phenomenal. No, but I do very low carb diet.
Nice.
A lot of fish, a lot of lean meats, and a lot of vegetables.
Have you felt a shift getting out of America and eating that diet on a regular basis? Do you find your quality of life has improved?
Yeah, well, America also has a very good thing going for it, which is you've got Whole Foods everywhere. You've got a lot of junk, but you also have a lot of options. And
right. Here,
it's less junk, but it's also less options.
Mm.
So it's hard to find organic produce sometimes, on this island.
Yeah, man. I'm all about those early mornings. I love getting up early, priming your day like that. I think that's a huge hole in some people's life, is if they just wake up whenever. I think that you could at least experiment with getting up at a specific time, specifically early, and starting your day with a task like exercising, with your gratitude ritual, stuff like that. I think that's huge, man. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah. There's one other thing that I do, which is I, along with my goals, which we all should be doing, I also document my wins.
Nice.
So that's kind of like the gratitude exercise, but I write them down. So I write down, every time there's a win, like it might be a tiny thing, like, somebody let you pass in traffic or something like that. And you start documenting your wins, and then all of a sudden you start seeing wins everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's, I love that.
I love that too, man. I like what you said about documenting small wins especially, but do you think that entrepreneurs can often not give themselves time to celebrate, time to congratulate themselves and be like, good job? Like, I feel like entrepreneurs are such drivers and warriors. Sometimes they never take the time to stop and appreciate the wins, which can be detrimental.
Well, not only can it be detrimental, but we know from behavioral science that's the quickest way to fail.
Mm.
So we know that incremental success is the way to kind of give your change. And so, if you're not celebrating your wins, what you're looking at is losses. What you're looking at is, you're not creating more. We're always creating more of what we see. Right. So if we're seeing win, we're creating more win. If we're seeing failure, we're creating more failure.
I like that, man. Yeah, you're dead on. Listen, we're about to wrap it up here. I got one final question. I want to talk about the kind of overall shift that's happening. I think that there's a lot of thought shift and philosophy shift when we take a look at modern society today here in the States. But just in modern free society, do you feel that people are moving away from that mentality that we mentioned earlier, the work, 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 pile stuff up, buy stuff like that, and kind of appreciating their quality of lives more? People make fun of millennials for, not working hard and taking me days or whatever, which is pretty funny. But what that is, I believe, is kind of a sign of a larger, more benevolent shift, where we say, okay, we're not just these work robots anymore that are just grinding and grinding and grinding. Humans are more complex. Humans are more dynamic. We need to have a more holistic approach to our lives and ourselves and employment and all that stuff. Do you feel that shift is kind of occurring, or do you feel we're still working our way out of, you know, industrialized mode?
No, yeah. I mean, look, as we mentioned before, the automation revolution is upon us, and you know, the industrial revolution values, which is the 40-hour work week, that's gone. Whether we like it or not, that's gone. You know, and the question really is, you know, what are you going to do with all this time?
How are we going to handle it? Right.
How are you going to handle it? And I see three paths. We're either going to figure out how to handle it, basically figure out how to
grow
deal with ourselves.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Or we're going to go into addiction of one form or another, you know, whether that be, I don't know, virtual reality, gaming, you know, substances, whatever, or death. Death.
Right.
We're seeing, again, more suicide than ever. And it's not because it's suffering. Suffering doesn't make you commit suicide. I mean, I guess it could, but I think meaninglessness,
yes,
is way more of a driver.
Traditional suffering does not. You're right. Meaninglessness. That's a great way to put it, Jeff. I'm so glad you used that word.
Yeah. So that's where we are as a species, and I think that it's important to acknowledge that. I think that our you know, the older generations will look at the younger generations and resent them or hate them for not working hard, and which is what, you know, the fleck that you mentioned that millennials get.
Right.
But they're wrong. The old generation is wrong because they don't live in this
same world.
We've never grappled with automation, right?
Yes.
So now it's a whole different ballgame, and we need to reinvent ourselves in order to be able to play in this game.
Yeah, I agree, man. That's well put. That's very succinct. And I just want to touch on the meaning aspect one more time and ask you, is it about where we place our value? Because if we place our value in Instagram likes and how people are treating me on Instagram and Facebook posts and status updates, and if we put our value there on things that truly are meaningless, of course we're going to have issues, mental health issues, spirituality crises, character issues, because we're putting all this substance and all this value on something that is truly unimportant and meaningless. Whereas if you find the real important things in your life and place value there, do you think that's maybe not the whole missing piece, but a big part of the missing piece?
Yeah. But the way I look at social media is it is addiction. I mean, the dopamine hit that you get when you see how many people liked your picture or something like that is very similar to drugs, right? So I mean, it's much more insidious than drugs, because drugs you actually need to, you know, get a substance.
Get and use. Yeah, and there's laws in place. You're right. Everyone's doing this drug.
Right. So
right,
we're just
pocket.
as a species, we're addicted to this stuff, and it's very depressing to see.
And if we put our spirit there, then our spirit is not going to thrive. So then let me end on this question, Jeff. What is most valuable to you? Here you are, a guy who's done what so many people strive to do. You know, you've hit it out of the park in the the entrepreneurship world, the creation world, the innovation world. You got all this stuff. After all of that, what is most important to you? Where do you put your values?
I put my values on freedom and time. Mm. You know, time is the one thing that I can't buy, and that's what I, you know, and freedom to do whatever I want whenever I want, mm-hmm. and to have any experience. I put my value in experiences.
Yes.
So that's where I place my value.
I totally see that, man. And I think also, let me just put a fine point on that, probably shared experiences, right? That's a piece that some people, you know, you talk a lot about your son. If it all revolves around others, you're going to have a happier life, I think.
Sure. I mean, one of the best experiences, I mean, is connection.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, being known, being seen, being vulnerable. Those are some of the best human experiences. I mean, jumping out of an airplane is one of when I talk about experiences, people think, oh, okay, so go travel, go. But those gross experiences, they're not the non-subtle experiences. Mm. Are the least valuable. They're the most
fleeting
in a way. They just don't matter.
That's so fascinating, man. Very important in the moment, but years down the road, not as much. Whereas the moment with your son lives forever in the front of your mind.
Right. I mean, you could put like a Maslow's pyramid for experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
At the very top, you would have spiritual experiences, like deep,
right.
like I am one with everything else type of experiences.
Sure.
Below that is I am one with, you know, my family, the people around me, my friends, my, you know.
Yeah, the level of connection.
Group, whatever.
So true.
Yeah, so...
connection with the
skydiving,
and then at the
bottom.
Exactly. Oh, I love that, man. We got to draw that up for Lifebook. That's great.
Yeah.
Listen, Jeffrey, this was fantastic, man. I don't know if you have any final words for Lifebookers who are looking to, you know, make their lives 12 category smart, who are looking to take their quality of life to the next level. This was a fantastic interview, but do you have any parting words for all the Lifebook members out there looking to better their lives?
Well, first of all, Lifebook works. And second of all, it's really important to redefine your priorities, because I'm also with Jim Carrey. I hope that everybody gets all the money in the world so that they can see firsthand that that's not where the answer is. So, you know, like I hope that Lifebook gets you there, that Lifebook gets you to the place that you want to get to financially. But once you get there, I hope that you have the balls to redefine what that category looks like for you.
Oh, I love it. Well put, Jeffrey. What a great sign off. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, my friend.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
The line's cutting out, so it's perfect. This is time to wrap it up, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I appreciate all you Lifebook members. This is Jeffrey Perlman and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. Bye-bye, everybody.